Chapter 90. Carys selected one of the Merriman's horses that looked like it still had some wind and spirit left. Its barding was mirrored and it shone in the morning sun. She might as well paint a target on her back. Well, she wasn't exactly inconspicuous herself. They didn't have long. The 400 paces between Lord Omnicrome's colour whites could only be crossed through a maze of alleys or rubble-strewn streets. It would slow them, but not much. Some things, though, had to be done. Carys moved to check King Haradul's body, gritting her teeth against the gore. He was definitely dead. She felt a peculiar emptiness. She'd wanted him dead. He deserved it. Now he was just gone. And, quite possibly, it hadn't accomplished anything. She saw her bichoir on the ground next to him. Son of a bitch. She picked it up and scanned the ground, but there was no sight of her ataghan. No more time. Corvin Danavis's men were finishing collecting gunpowder and shot or replacement weapons from the dead and forming back up. Kip looked as bad as Carys would have expected. Corvin said, "It's called being lightsick, Kip, and it might do anything to you. Make you feel weak as a puppy or strong as a sea demon. I've seen modest men tear off all their clothes because they couldn't bear anything touching their skin. And shy women, well, never mind."
"Hey, that was just the one time," Carys protested, mounting up.
When you could, it was good not to let a drafter sink too deep into themselves after drafting too much. Corvin laughed.
"I don't know that I call you shy on any day, Carys Whiteoak."
He glanced down at her leg.
"Certainly not today."
Carys followed Corvin's eyes. Oops. She had managed to tear the slit in her dress practically to her hip, and sitting on a horse didn't help. Well, what was she going to do? Go change?
"Time's up," Corvin shouted to his men. "We head for the docks. Catch up or die."
One of his officers came to him with a question, and he was swallowed up by his duties. Which left Carys with Kip. She would prefer to be unencumbered during a battle, but she wasn't going to abandon him. Not again. There were things more important than her freedom. She sidled her horse over to the platform.
"Come here, Kip," she
said with a little more edge than she meant. Obviously dazed, Kip clambered up, and they were off. At first, Carys thought they were going to get away cleanly. They came to the bridge. The far end was blocked with wagons and carts that must have just been set on fire moments before Corvin's men arrived, or they would have seen the smoke. The men at the front of the column skidded to a stop, and the men who'd been running behind them collided with them, collapsing the column and causing chaos. Corvin, mounted near the front, was trying to extricate some drafters from the crush to get them to work on clearing the flaming barricades. It would only take a minute or two in normal circumstances. Near to the back of the column, Carys pulled up sharply and started shouting at the men near her to form a rear guard.
"Load muskets! Affix matches!"
She wheeled around in time to see the first of the colour whites pursuing them. Carys had never seen anything like it. She'd known green whites could change their joints to give their legs immense springiness, but the greens weren't the only colour whites leaping from roof to roof behind them. A yellow white, limbs all aglow, ran straight toward the edge of a flat roof, gathering Luxin in both hands. She leapt off the edge and threw her hands down, releasing a jet of yellow at the ground, using the recoil to throw her up high enough to make it to the next roof, like she was playing leapfrog in midair. A flash of green, much closer. Carys shot a ball of green up, intercepting the green white as it descended. Her shot blasted the green white off its trajectory, lifting it so that instead of landing among the terrified soldiers, it collided with the side of a building. The soldiers around it recovered before the white did. Carys heard a rattle of musket fire. Damn! Veterans would have dispatched it with their blades, saving precious shots for more active enemies. Another green white streaked through the air and Carys missed it. It crashed through the back ranks, scattering men. Others, terrified, leveled their muskets and fired, most of them missing the white and hitting their own friends. By the time they put that one down, whites of every colour were converging on them. Lord Omnicrome's army was rounding a corner, not 300 paces away, jogging, picking up speed for a charge. Half a dozen of Omnicrome's red and sub-red drafters were mounted. They closed within 200 paces and lobbed great flaming missiles toward Corvin's massed, trapped men. A blue-white, all glittering angles and blades, was the next across the rooftops to the left. A sub-red was leaping across roofs on the right, bald, her whole body literally aflame. Out of nowhere, a big drafter dropped into the street straight in front of Karis, his back to Corvin's men. He stood, arms spread out as if he were holding ropes and expecting a heavy load. His arms snapped out just as the blue-white and sub-red-white leapt to attack. Both color whites jerked hard as the invisible superviolet Luxin ropes around their necks went taut. The blue-white's body went abruptly horizontal, all the Luxin it had held going to jelly in an instant as it lost concentration. It crashed to the ground in front of the rearguard. The sub-red-white, without the benefit of blue armor around her neck, barely changed directions. Her body landed on the next roof and fell, and her flaming head rolled right into the river. The drafter who'd saved them shot a glance back, making sure the color whites were dead. It took Karis's breath away. It was Usef Tep, the Purple Bear himself, the hero of the False Prism's War. Even as Karis registered the fact, she saw the flaming missiles that were arcing toward the rear guard suddenly veer left and right in the air, exploding at a safe distance. Another green-white she hadn't even seen crashed into the ground, riddled with blue Luxin knives. Karis saw Elelef Korzin, skin luminous blue, step out of an alley. "We've got your backs! Go!" a woman yelled. Karis turned to see at least a dozen drafters stand on the last rooftop. It was like Karis had stepped into a hero's gallery. The woman who'd yelled was Samilla Saye. Didi Fallingleaf stood next to her, skin wrapped in vines of pure green Luxin. Flame hands stood on the corner of the building, a steady stream of fireballs popping from each hand. Sisters Tala and Tera to the right. Talon Gim bleeding heavily, left arm useless, but going to stand beside Usef Tep in the street. And others that Karis recognized from her youth, or who'd fought for Dazen and whom she'd heard described in vivid detail.
"Damn you! You and that boy are the only ones who can save Gavin! Take him and get the hell out of here!"
Samilla Saye yelled, her eyes flashing. Corvin's men surged as the barricades gave way. Karis felt Kip stirring behind her. Lord Omnichrome's army was like an onrushing tide. Karis spurred her horse on, only shooting glances back at the magical conflagration behind her. It was enough. All of Corvin's men made it over the bridge. From there, it was a straight, adrenaline-fueled shot to the docks. Karis made it with the last group. Corvin, up at the front, was moving toward Gavin down on the docks. Gavin was working, drafting barges, it looked like. Someone alerted Gavin, and Karis saw a flash of his crooked smile toward Corvin. And in that moment, Karis knew. It was like she'd been clubbed. Her throat tightened. The pieces spun together. 1,000 pieces from the past 16 years, and the last few in the past few days. That grin, patting Corvin's shoulder on the wall this morning. If Karis hadn't spent more than a decade in the Blackguard, she wouldn't have caught it. But Gavin and Corvin should hate each other. That could be explained away. They were professionals, sure. They had reasons to work together, right. But seamless command and instant obedience come only with time and trust. How could these men trust each other? Who comes back from war a better man? Gavin had said, "What's in that note, it isn't true. I swear it isn't true." Why would Gavin double down on a lie that he knew was going to be exposed minutes later? Because it wasn't a lie. Oh, shit.